Next Monday, 46 Cambodian refugees are scheduled to be deported from California to Cambodia. It will be the largest deportation flight of Cambodians in U.S. history.
Everyone on the flight came to the U.S. as a refugee, by and large, when they were infants and children. They had contact with the criminal system often 20 or 30 years ago, and now decades later being swept up for deportation.
Seer Oon is one of them.
Seer grew up in San Diego. Most of his family died in the genocide, but he was able to escape with his parents when he was an infant. When he was 19 years old, he served as a lookout while some other kids snuck into a house to steal some household items. He netted about $120 from the burglary. He spent a year in county jail as a result and then was ordered deported. Now, 20 years later, ICE detained him as a check-in. He's married, he's a parent, he's employed full-time. And he's scheduled to be deported next week and permanently separated from his family. He's currently applying for a pardon from the governor.
That's Anoop Prasad, a senior staff attorney for immigrant rights at the Asian Law Caucus. And he works with Cambodians like Seer who are holding out hope that California Governor Jerry Brown could intervene and halt the deportation order. According to data provided by ICE, as of September of this year, 110 Cambodian nationals have been deported. 74 were deported in 2016.
This community was not provided with mental health care, even though the PTSD and depression rates of the genocide survivors was off the charts. They were not given job training or language training. They have some of the highest unemployment, poverty, incarceration rates of any community. And so this generation that had come here as children, by the time they were hitting their teens, the U.S. was at the height of its mass incarceration crisis. And so they were having contact with police, entered into the criminal system often when they were still teenagers, 15, 16 years old. And then Congress passed a series of laws in the 1990s, which made deportation mandatory if you had a felony conviction or a long list of felony convictions. So they entered the criminal system, then were ordered deported. At the time, the U.S. did not have a deportation agreement with Cambodia. And so for a very long time, the U.S. could not deport people to Cambodia. Over the past several years, the U.S. has applied diplomatic pressure on Cambodia to get them to accept people for deportation. That diplomatic pressure has dramatically increased under the current administration with the use of visa sanctions and other threats to get Cambodia to accept more people for deportation. And so as a result, we've seen wave after wave of massive ICE raids on the Cambodian community over the last year.
Tell us a little bit about the types of crimes we're talking about here.
So it's a really wide range of crimes. Everything from drug offenses, assault, to burglary. I think what's really consistent in this group, though, is that these are people who had contacts with law enforcement, entered into the criminal system when they were teenagers in the 80s and 90s, and now are being deported for things in their 30s and 40s.
There are some folks who would say, well, if you break the law and you're not a U.S. citizen, then you should not be here.
Sure. So these people don't pose a danger to the community. Something that happened when someone was 17, 18, 19 years old doesn't accurately reflect who they are decades later. These people, by and large, have minor children of their own. They're working full-time to support their families. We've seen the impact that deportation has on these families. We see depression popping up in children after their parents get deported. We often see families struggling to make ends meet after losing a wage earner, having to rely on benefits, falling into poverty. When you look at the enormous hardship that this causes to American families, it really does not make very much sense.
I also spoke with Katya Sengal. She's the author of Exiled, From the Killing Fields of Cambodia to California and Back. And I wanted her to give us a sense of the history behind Cambodian migration to the United States.
Yes, so the Khmer Rouge was the 4 years, 1975-79, and as Anoop was saying, one of the worst killings of the 20th century. And there were about 158,000 Cambodians that came to the U.S. during that time, and almost every one of them had experienced near death due to starvation, and 90% had a family member or friend who had been murdered. A lot of them resettled in the inner cities. We got a lot in California, Lowell, Massachusetts, another Washington state. And U.S. refugee policy, and the U.N. criticizes the U.S. for this. You don't become an automatic citizen. A lot of countries, you come as a refugee, you end up being a citizen. In the U.S., that's not the process. You're a legal permanent resident. You have to wait another 5 years for citizenship. It costs quite a lot of money. And then there are also language barriers and such that people don't realize that importance of getting citizenship.
Right. A lot of immigrant and refugee children become citizens automatically when their parents become citizens. And that didn't happen in the Cambodian community for a few reasons. One is when Cambodian communities were resettled in the U.S., language classes weren't readily accessible. And so to become a citizen, you need to pass an English test, reading, writing, speaking, understanding, and also a U.S. history test. Their parents' generation largely was not able to pass that test. And then for this generation, they could have applied for citizenship when they turned 18. By that time, a lot of them had already entered the criminal system and were ineligible. And then I think for other Cambodian youth, this is the only country they have any memory of. Effectively, they consider themselves to be American. They never really thought about, I have to apply to become an American citizen. And it isn't something that really occurred to them until suddenly they're in immigration detention facing deportation.
Katia, have you followed up with any Cambodians who have been deported from the United States? And if so, what has the experience been for them?
Yeah, so there's 669 over there now. 16 of those are female, the rest are male. Incarcerated, 15, 29 deceased. And it's really hard because, as Anoop was saying, they consider themselves American. They were pretty much raised here. So this is what they know. So going over there is difficult. A lot speak the language, but they can't write it. One deportee says it's like spaghetti. It looks like spaghetti to him. So there's that. There's cultural differences. There's one of the men I wrote about in there, he was already deceased when I went there, but his friends had these pictures of him on their phones from his funeral. And I think he was just in his 30s and he literally had drunk himself to death, a kind of form of suicide. And after I wrote the book, the mother of his daughter, who's a teenager in California, wrote me. And so just to realize there's this girl who has no chance now of having a father. And I think for some of that, that's that re-traumatization too of how it continues is once people are deported, then their children here now lose that parent. One of the people I wrote about who's facing deportation, David, his father was killed by the Khmer Rouge, and now he has a 7-year-old son. So when he is deported, his son will essentially lose him. And that deportation re-traumatizes his mother, a lot of times that oldest generation who was separated from their children under the Khmer Rouge, when that comes again, that threat of that separation or when the separation comes again, it really re-traumatizes them all over again.
Anoop Prasad is a senior staff attorney for immigrant rights at the Asian Law Caucus, and Katia Sengal is author of Exiled, From the Killing Fields of Cambodia to California and Back. Thank you to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.